This is the On the Line podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of the On the Line podcast. Here again with Noah. How you doing, man?
Doing good, dude. Got a bunch of good stuff coming back with NHL and NBA, so super happy to have that back.
It's really exciting, dude. Jam-packed week this week. I was off last week. Went on a little family vacation down to Myrtle Beach with all the COVID going on. It was real nice. But we're back this week, jam-packed show. We have a special guest on the show, Arjun. He was our college roommate, and he does all the visuals for us. What's going on, Arjun?
What's going on, guys? Good to be here.
So let's just go through what we're going to be doing, the agenda for this week's show. We're going to start off with the Jamal Adams trade, which happened last week. Then we're going to get into the NBA action that happened the past couple days. Then we're going to go to the In the News segment. We're going to talk about how COVID is affecting the NFL and the MLB. And we're going to talk about the Joe Kelly Dodgers pitcher incident. And then we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the NHL action that happened over the past couple of days. And then we're going to finish the show with the three of us debating who was overrated, who was underrated on the NFL Top 100, and who missed the list. So, you know what? Let's get started right here. Arjun, I'm going to defer to you. The Jamal Adams, you know, he was traded to the Seattle Seahawks for a load of picks and a safety. What are your initial reactions about that trade?
First of all, I would say, you know, this could be something new for Seattle. I mean, we could see their defense get back to form like how they were with the Legion of Boom, with a huge safety and a huge playmaker like Jamal Adams. But then again, they're trading a lot of picks for that player. And, you know, down the line, I mean, Jamal Adams is a young player, but look on the other side of the ball, man. They got a lot of problems at the in offensive line, and trading away the first-round pick, and I think it was a third-round pick, too, in 2021.
Yeah,
so a first pick and a third in the same year. You know, I would have used those to beef up that offensive line. I mean, you know, they could get somebody in free agency, but I don't know. I mean, we'll just have to see how it plays out. I mean, they got a beast of a player with Jamal Adams.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely, like I said, you know, he's the top safety in the league, in my opinion, right now. He can do it. He can do everything. He can stack the box. He can play coverage. You know, he's a great all-around player. Noah, what were your initial reactions?
Yeah, kind of similar to what Arjun had said is that, you know, he's a great playmaker. Obviously, we've raved about him on past shows that we think that he's the best safety in the NFL. But we've also said that we don't necessarily believe that that's the most important position on a defense. If anything, it's a luxury to have a great safety like that. And to give up, what, two first-round picks, and I believe it was a fourth, actually, not a third, but still, And I think the Jets are getting a player as well, correct?
Yeah. Brandon McDougal.
McDougal as well. He's a starting caliber safety.
Yeah, he's no joke. And then if you compare that to what the Steelers did last season, where they only traded one first round pick for Micah Fitzpatrick, who is probably one of the best at the position to do it as well, at least in the top five, I would say. How different is it really between Minka and Jamal? Do the amount of picks actually tell the value of the difference? Absolutely not. I think they really reached in the terms of the value here for that trade. I don't know how much better it's going to make them as a team. I don't think it's going to make them go 16-0 if that's what they're hoping for. And like Arjun had said, there's plenty of other positions on that team that they need to address. I mean, they have whiffed, and I mean whiffed bad, on some of their first round picks. The only reason we don't know of them is because they don't pan out. I mean, I'm looking at their first round pick history. Rashad Penny in 2018, he's been considered a bust. He can never stay healthy. Malik McDowell, who was a defensive tackle, don't even think he's on the team anymore. Jermaine Ifedi, I don't think he's panned out as well either. I mean, they just cannot get it right in the first round. And they've traded away their picks again. So they've been whiffing in the draft. And I just don't see this as necessarily a smart move for the Seahawks.
I agree. You know what? I think that it's like, at first when I saw the notification on my phone, I was like, wow, like He got dealt. I thought that he would get dealt. I was very wrong. I'll be the first one to say that. I thought that the Jets would only receive a second and a third for him just because they had no leverage. Like, you have a player that's like a superstar. It's like, you know what? I'm not going to play for you guys. Trade me. So the Jets have to trade him. It turns out that I was very wrong. They had all the leverage. Seattle, for some reason, gave him all those picks, the two firsts, and they gave him the third in exchange for the for Jamal Adams and a fourth round pick. I mean, that's kind of absurd. I mean, like you said, Noah, it's not an extremely important position. It's like you're trading for a quarterback, you know? It's kind of reminds me of the Jalen Ramsey trade when Jalen Ramsey got traded midseason for two first-round picks. Like, okay, I understand a corner, especially if it's a shutdown corner. You know, you could give up. It's still a little rich, but, I mean, you could justify with a corner with a safety, especially one that doesn't cover. Like, he plays a lot of good different positions. Like, he can stack the box. He can blitz. He can sack the QB. But he's not a big guy to get interceptions and things. I don't know. I think it's a lot. You know, the Jets really got a haul, and that's really good for the Jets. You know, this year they may not be that interesting, especially now you see, you know, they got Jamal Adams is gone, and CJ Mosley just came out over the weekend and said that he's not going to play due to COVID. So that Jets defense is going to really hurt, and they may not be this good, that good this year. But, I mean, with the load of picks that they have in the next couple drafts, and they have – the new player, Bradley McDougal. I mean, they can totally turn around that team. Hopefully, if they can draft well, you know, it's yet to be seen if Gase is going to stick around or if they're going to change upper management. But I think the Jets definitely, got a great haul for Jamal Adams. And look, like we said, safety is not the most important team position. I mean, safety is not going to make or break your team and win you. You know, how many more wins do you guys think a safety is going to get you? Like one, maybe half a game, a safety is going to win you on the
schedule. Not many, man. Like I think at the safety position, it's a player that's going to come out there. He'll make a couple big plays in a game, and, you know, he'll be that deciding factor in a game. But, you know, like you guys have been saying, it's not the most important, position on a team. You know, I think having a shutdown corner like Jalen Ramsey, like we mentioned before, or even having a great defensive edge or middle linebacker or any linebacker really who can really just shut down that box and really get into the QB's face. I think that's probably the most important position on the defense. But, I mean, having Jamal Adams now, it'll definitely be interesting to see what happens on the defensive side of the ball for the Seahawks.
Yeah, and we know that offense can ball. I mean, when you have Russell Wilson behind center, I mean, anything's possible. DK Metcalf and, you know, Tyler Lockett, they brought in Greg Olsen. They still got Hollister back there. They also brought in Carlos Hyde to join the backfield with Chris Carson. So they definitely have a bunch of weapons on offense. That defense, I mean, who do they have? Clowney looks like he's moving on. They have Bobby Wagner back there. But, I mean, Shaquem Griffin, he's decent. They have Quandre Diggs, who they got from the Lions. He's decent as well. But, I mean, a lot of the players that they have back there, none of them are really, really good. And Jamal Adams adding it back there, sure, it's going to help up the secondary, but I don't think it's enough. Like you guys said, I think that they could have used the draft picks more wisely. Any other thoughts you guys want to add?
Yeah, If I'll go again, I mean, even though that Minka did help out the Steelers, that I think everyone would agree that the Steelers are much more of a complete defense. They were just missing one piece on that defense to really elevate them. I mean, and that defense truly did force many more turnovers once he sort of came over. But is Jamal Adams going to do the same for the Seattle Seahawks with a tougher schedule and a tougher division? I don't think so. I mean, they're going to be facing a lot of elite offenses, not only just pass attacks, but just offenses in general. I mean, the Rams are going to be more of a pass-heavy offense now than they ever were just because of losing Todd Gurley, and they're going to go with the backfield by committee. They don't really know who they're going to have there. And then with the Cardinals trading for D-Hop, and they already have Christian Kirk, Larry Fitzgerald, Andy Isabella, and they're getting Hakeem Butler back from injury, who didn't even get to play last season. I mean, that's an elite pass attack right there. I think Kyler's going to make a huge jump. And then if you look at the rest of their – and then I'll mention another division opponent there with the Niners. I mean, that's probably the weakest pass attack in the division. But still, I mean, great offense. They do have Kittle. They have Deebo Samuel. They did draft a receiver. But if you go look at their schedule, I mean, Mark, we've talked about this on past shows. It's going to be tough for them. And I don't know if Jamal is going to add, like you said, is he going to add 2-3 games to their win total? I don't think so. I think it's one or maybe two at the max.
And, you know, Arjun made a good point. It's like people think that, you know, bringing Jamal back there, you're going to turn into the Legion of Boom again. The Legion of Boom, if people remember, was Richard Sherman. And he was one of the best corners in the league at that point. Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, Brandon Browner, and Byron Maxwell. Like, you had talent all around that secondary. They don't have that talent anymore. Like, your secondary is literally Jamal Adams and Shaquem Griffin. And then who? Like, no one else. So I don't think it's really going to be that Legion of Boom that they had before. It's going to help them a little bit on the defense for sure. But you're giving up. You're putting all your eggs in one basket. You don't have a first-round pick for the next 2 years. And, like, first-round picks are so important. But like you said, Noah, maybe they looked at it and were like, you know what? We're just really, really shitty at drafting. So, you know what? Those first-round picks mean nothing to us. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know what they were thinking, but I guess the season will tell if there is a season due to COVID. But you know what? I hope there is. Let's move on to the NBA. I mean, there was NBA came back this weekend. They were having the scrimmage games before the weekend, and then the NBA came back. First reactions from the NBA coming back, I thought the games were really exciting. I thought that the fans that they had in there, the digital fans, I thought everything made it look very entertaining, and I could really watch the basketball. It was not boring. It was not quiet. It was really intense. You know, what are your guys' first reactions to that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's great to have sports back. You always want to just have something to watch or look forward to, you know, in your day, coming home from work, doing whatever you got going on during the day. It's good to have NBA at night just to wind down, have something to watch. And like you said, Mark, everything's been super entertaining. I'll point to the game that happened two nights ago with the Rockets and the Mavs. I mean, what, 153 to 149 was the final score in OT. And I think they set the record for the highest amount of points scored in the first half. Like, that is just absolutely absurd. Coming out of quarantine, too, you just have guys like James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Luka Doncic, all balling out, and that's just in that one game. I mean, you have plenty of star-studded caliber teams here just getting ready for the playoffs. Honestly, Mark, you and I had talked, the Lakers don't necessarily look as good. They dropped a game to the Raptors last night, so maybe we'll see a bunch of upsets here. I think a lot of teams are going to be motivated coming in with this restart.
Yeah. I mean, I especially was high on the Lakers. I was like, you know what? The Lakers look like the most polished team. You know, LeBron, Anthony Davis, you just have so many players around there that want to play for that team. And they were working really well together. But if you watch the games this weekend, they beat the Clippers narrowly. Very narrowly, just because LeBron was literally able to drive down the center and put the ball off the backboard and was not contested on the rebound and put it in to win. I mean, no team does that. It's the first game back. Okay, the Clippers were kind of unorganized. They didn't look themselves, especially compared to when the Clippers played yesterday, and they totally, totally just demolished the Pelicans. Like, the Pelicans, they dismantled them. At one point, they were up by like 35 points. And I was like, it's not even halftime yet. And you're up by 35 points. Like, what does the coach say at halftime to the Pelicans to keep them motivated when you're down by 30 points? Like, it's just absolutely embarrassing. But you look at the Lakers yesterday. They played the Raptors. They were pretty good. But, I mean, the Raptors, they fell. I mean, the Lakers fell apart in the end of the game. I mean, it was almost a tie game. And the Raptors just put up so many points, and the Lakers just fell apart. So I'm going to reevaluate when I said that the Lakers might win the whole championship. I don't know. I mean, Toronto looks really good. Milwaukee looks unstoppable. They play tonight, or actually they're playing right now. But I mean, the Rockets look good. They're lights out. It'll be really interesting to see what plays out here. Noah, do you want to change your take on who you think is going to win the whole thing? Or, like, what are your, you know, coming out of just the first few games, who do you think looks the strongest right now?
Yeah, like you said, I mean, I think the Bucks look really strong coming out of the East. I think the West is much more of a toss-up, and that's just par for the course there, just because I think the West is more loaded. A dark horse team I really like is the Mavs. I mean, they have Luka, they have Porzingis. I mean, they have tons of other playmakers coming off of the bench. That's just a dark horse team coming out of the West. They have a much tougher road than anyone would have from the East, but, you know, I got to believe in LeBron. I mean, like, you think of the storyline for the NBA, you know, Kobe's tragic passing earlier this year. I mean, like, this, you would seem like it's almost destiny for the Lakers to win it the year Kobe passes. I mean, I know LeBron probably has that in the back of his mind. Maybe some other players and members of that organization do as well. I thought at the beginning of this whole quarantine restart with the playoffs that it was going to be Lakers-Bucks. I couldn't really see it any other way. Might have to go with the Clippers here out of the West. I do think with Kawhi and Paul George, they're probably a stronger duo, and I think their bench is probably a little deeper than the Lakers. They just look a little fresher. They're a little younger of a team as well. And so that would be my pick coming out of the West if I had to pick any favorite. And so I would pick I'd pick Clippers Bucks if I had to pick a finals.
Yeah, I mean, the Bucks look too good. I don't know if the Rockets can really get it done. I love how much they shoot and how much they're able, how many points they're able to put up, but they don't play defense. No one on that team plays defense, so it's like it's kind of hard to win. I think tonight will be a very telling sign if they can put up a good fight against Milwaukee. But like you said, I mean, the Mavs are just going to be a tough team. Like, they looked really good. They got a lot of playmakers on that team, so I think the Mavs could really, you know, shock people here. But the Lakers are going to need to step it up. And the Clippers, Paul George the other night was just absolutely unbelievable. When they get Lou Williams back, I mean, he wasn't playing now because he supposedly went to go get wings at a strip club in Atlanta. But, like, did you guys see on Twitter the stripper or from the dancer, excuse me, from the strip club was like, yeah, Lou Williams wasn't here just for some wings. Lou Williams tipped me very well, and it wasn't for just wings. So, like, everyone knows that, like, come on, man, what are you doing? Like, your team's trying to make the playoffs here. Like, they clearly could use you. And if that team is at full strength, like, I think the Clippers could totally just, you know, totally demolish the Lakers if the Lakers don't step it up. But it's really interesting, and I love that the sports are back now. But let's move into the In the News segment, where we talk about news stories that happened over the past week. Let's start off here with the COVID in the NFL. The NFL set parameters where it allows players to opt out of the upcoming season due to concerns about people at home or anything like that, health conditions where they just want to opt out from the season. So, I mean, the Patriots had a bunch of players opt out. I mean, a bunch of good players opt out. They had their left tackle opt out. They had Brandon Bolden opt out, Dante Hightower opt out. Like, they just have a bunch of guys opting out. You know, do you guys think that it might be a little bit of a, you know, maybe Bill Belichick's coming up with a little plan here? Like, you know what, guys, if you really want to opt out, I'm not going to hold it against you. Like, totally do it. As many of you guys that want to do it, let's go. Just opt out, you know, do whatever's best for you. What do you guys think? Do you think something fishy is going on in New England?
Or should
I wouldn't
go here?
Yeah, sure. I wouldn't say so much it's anything fishy going on. I just think, you know, a lot of the players, that they're putting their health and their family's health first. So, you know, they're just taking all the necessary precautions that they want to take. But then, of course, you know, you have Bill Belichick there. And, I mean, you can't really argue that he is one of the greatest coaches of all time. So given the pieces that he has and given the players that he has now, I don't have any doubt in my mind that Bill Belichick can and will make something happen this season. You know, whether they make the playoffs or they, you know, make a run for the Super Bowl, or, you know, they go 10-6 and barely make the playoffs. You know, I don't think that the Patriots, we're going to see a sharp drop off compared to previous seasons. I mean, it'll be interesting to see with their quarterback situation. But, you know, I don't think, like, I don't think Bill Belichick is saying to the players, go away, like, take, like, opt out and let me figure it out. He's obviously concerned for his players, but it'll definitely be interesting to see what goes on this season and see who else opts out I think that'll be the biggest thing to watch, just watching these key players kind of putting their health and families first.
Yeah, and you know, Noah, before I give you a chance to give your input here, Arjun has never been on the show before. I'd like to hear his input here. What do you think that the record, off the top of your head, what do you think the record of the Pats is going to be, and are they going to win the AFC East?
You know, I don't think they're going to win the AFC East. They'll definitely, you know, make a push for it, and they'll definitely give some trouble to that division. As far as their record, I don't know, 9-7 maybe, 10-6. Their quarterback situation is iffy. They're losing a lot of key players on that defense and even on the offense. So it'll be, I mean, who knows? Maybe Bill Belichick does pull something out of his ass and, you know, they make another Super Bowl run. But, you know, I think it'll definitely be a battle in the AFC East.
Wow. Okay. 9-7, 10-6. Geez. I said that the Pats will not get over 8 wins. I said 8 wins is their max. And I'm sticking to it. That was even when they got Cam Newton. I said 8 wins is their max. I'm sticking to it. But Noah, what are your thoughts on the Pats players and just players opting out in general?
Yeah, as Arjun was talking, I was pulling up a list just to check out who's actually opting out. I did see a big name in Dante Hightower, but I mean, that's one starter right there. Then you have Patrick Chung, another starter. And then you have Marquise Lee, who, in all honesty, he could play over Mohamed Sanu. I mean, Sanu looked abysmal last season after that trade. Danny Vitale, even though they don't use a fullback that often, he is their number one option there. And then Matt Lacoste, who they did draft Devin Asiasi, and they also drafted Dalton Keene, but he was slated to be their starting tight end. I mean, I count 5 or 6 guys who are going to be decent contributors for that team, and they've all opted out. And then if you point at Patrick Chung and Dante Hightower exclusively, those are guys who I would I don't want to say considered stars, but they're good players. They're very solid contributors, and everyone knows who they are. I don't know what the heck Bill Belichick's doing. Arjun, I'm going to have to disagree. I think something might be fishy going on here. Bill Belichick might be planning something. I don't want to say that he's going to tank. He has a lot to prove now that Brady's left town and that he can win without Tom Brady. But, you know, maybe he's trying to put together some kind of tank job, get Trevor Lawrence. Who knows? I mean, Mark, what do you think? You raised the question of it being fishy. I just don't know. These are way too many starters opting out for them to actually, you know, be deep at any position.
You know what? I just think Bill Belichick's just saying to these guys, I think he's like, you know what? If you even have the slightest concern, I don't want you to play. He's not telling them not to play. He's just like, you know what? You guys don't feel uncomfortable even a little bit, opt out. He's like, you know what? We'll take care of it. Next season, you know, maybe that's a whole reason why they only give Cam, you know, a 1-year deal. Maybe he's like looking at next year. He's like, oh, Trevor Lawrence is there. Justin Fields is there. Like, maybe we can make something happen here. So, you know, I just don't think that, you know, it's probably the team in the league that's getting the most attention for the most players being opting out. And I don't think it's a coincidence. I think Bill's got something going on here. You know, he's tricky. But I think he definitely has something going on here, and that's something to definitely keep track of and keep an eye on. But let's move on to the MLB restarting. Excuse me. You know, it's nice to see baseball back. The thing is that the baseball coming back, it's not like the NBA, and it's not like the NHL, where it comes back and there's a lot of energy and the crowd. You know, they still have some crowd noise, so it's kind of nice. The MLB, I think it's more boring than usual to even watch. Like, I don't even want to watch them. Like, even sports is back, and I'm like, oh God, only baseball's on. But you know, what do you guys think? What do you guys think about the new MLB? I mean, it's great, it's back, but I just think that it's kind of boring to still watch just without no fans. It makes it even more boring, and it's like it kind of turns me off from watching it.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, the big thing that differs from the NBA and the NHL is, honestly, they can control sort of the camera angles because of such a tight space that they're playing in. With the MLB, they couldn't tarp off the entire stadium because when you view the ball flying in the outfield or, you know, wherever it's hit to, I mean, it would just be impossible for them to tarp off all of the stands. So when you're looking at it visually, it's not as appealing because you're looking at all of these empty seats and these guys just in these huge stadiums with nobody there. With the NBA, they have great visuals behind the bench. They don't have to show the rest of the arena. The same with the NHL too. So that's probably one thing, Mark, that you point to where it's like, you know, it's much more entertaining and much more appealing to watch the NBA and the NHL. With the MLB, it's just like, wow, it's baseball, which is already slow. Plus, there's no fans there. So you're just, it's like watching guys practicing. I mean, it's good to have it back. But if you're not a fan of one specific team, I'm not going to turn on, you know, I'm not going to go watch the Dodgers versus the Diamondbacks. I'd much rather tune in to watch the Lakers versus the Bucks or the Lakers versus the Clippers. I think anyone who's not necessarily a diehard fan of those teams would tune in to watch that over, you know, Pirates, Reds. And I'll poke some fun at the Pirates because I've been watching them and they've just been atrocious. I'm really upset. I think they're last in the MLB right now. So,
The MLB, I mean, the interesting thing, I saw Joe Kelly last week. I don't know if you guys saw that. Joe Kelly, the Dodgers, got suspended for, 8 games, I believe it was. He threw a pitch, and it almost hit Correa in the head. He ducked out of the way. Correa plays for the Astros. Astros cheating in 2018. Everyone knows that they're cheaters. And I wish that fans were in the stadium so they could boo them because cheating, you know, it's terrible. It's terrible. You literally robbing the other team of, and everyone in the MLB of even winning a championship. It just gets my blood boiling. But anyway, he threw a pitch and it almost hit Correa in the head. Then he strikes him out and he's like sticking his tongue out at him, like mouth out at him. And I was like, this shit's hilarious. Like, this is what they deserve. Like, they deserve this stuff. Like, the people coming on Twitter and everything are like, oh, you could have ended his career. Point out the 5 people in the MLB that have even had career-ending injuries because they got hit by a pitch. You can't even name them. I think it was one guy maybe in the 90s or something that happened to. Like, I get it that you're harming another person and it's not good. Like, you should never purposely try to hurt somebody. But it didn't hit him. The Astros cheated. And you're going to give him a bigger suspension than any player on the Astros received for cheating and winning a World Series doing it? Like, that's ridiculous. I mean, what do you guys think? You guys think that the suspension was deserved? I think it's kind of ridiculous.
Arjun, do you want to go?
Yeah, you know, I don't know much about the MLB. I don't know much about what goes on. I'm not the biggest fan of it. I think it's kind of boring, but I'm kind of following the news and, you know, seeing him. Was the suspension deserved? Yeah, I guess. I mean, he was trying to purposefully harm another player. Should it have been 8 games? Probably not. But, you know, Mark, like you said, too, the Astros, like, everybody knows they cheated their way to the World Series, and they won. And nothing happened to them. So, it is the players kind of voicing their frustration in their own way. Obviously, there are better ways to do it than hurling a 90-mile-an-hour fastball at somebody's head. But, you know, I mean, if the players can't get the justice that they're looking for in regards to cheating in their league from the league, then, I mean, I guess they're kind of just, you know, taking it into their own hands and, you know, like I said before, they're chucking 90-mile-an-hour fastballs at people's heads now.
Noah, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, if anyone's sort of been following at the MLB for a long time, it's kind of assumed, look, pitchers are going to throw at some players sometimes. If they want to make a statement, that's what they're going to do. That's how they do it. MLB umpires know it. It's just a way of the game. Look, I think if I were a pitcher, and I'm not going to go out to necessarily injure a guy, I would think every team is going to throw at the Astros players at least one time just to sort of make a statement to make up for them cheating. Like Arjun said, I mean, how long were they doing it? I mean, they could say they were only doing it for a season or two, but if you're stealing signs and you're able to get away with it without people knowing for years, I mean, who knows how long they were doing it? I still think they're a good team. Maybe they could have won the World Series without stealing signs. I still think they have plenty of talent. But listen, they cheated. They're going to throw at them. Should they have gotten, or should Joe Kelly have gotten a suspension as long as that? Absolutely not. Maybe a game or two. I mean, the intent was there. But listen, every team is going to be out to get the Astros this season. Every time they play them, everyone's going to know that they're cheaters. I feel like they got a little bit of a cop out this season just because there are no fans, but every time they would be in a visiting ballpark, I would guess that they would have gotten booed. I don't know what you guys think, but if the Astros visited my hometown team's ballpark, everyone would just boo them no matter what, just because everyone knows they're cheaters.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with that. How could you not? Like, you literally cheated. You used devices to cheat. And it's like, you expect not to get booed, or you expect pitchers not to do this. Like you said, Noah, you played baseball a very long time. Like, people do this. Like, they do this. But, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. And the MLB is actually having a huge problem with the COVID-19 breakout. NHL is doing a phenomenal job. The NBA bubble is working amazing. And the MLB can't get it together. I mean, it's kind of, it's bad. I mean, the Marlins, they had a bunch of guys that had COVID. I believe the Phillies now have a bunch of guys that had COVID. They're canceling games, or they're delaying games because teams can't play because of COVID. It's a mess. And the MLB commissioner is like, hey, the players got to tune it up. I mean, the MLB commissioner does not want to cancel the season, but if it comes down to it and the players are not safe, they're going to do it. So, you know, I think that the MLB's got to get their stuff together, but it's nice to see that the NHL and the NBA can really get it done, and, you know, they're doing a good job there. But we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be back in about 1 minute. And we're back. Second half of the show. If you guys missed the first half, we talked about the Jamal Adams trade. We talked about the NBA that happened over the past weekend. Then we went into the news. We talked about the NFL COVID, and especially the Patriots, and if they're cooking up something there. We talked about the MLB, and we talked about the COVID breakout in the MLB and what happened to Joe Kelly and his suspension regarding a pitch thrown at Alex Correa. But we're in the second half of the show now. I'm joined again by Noah and by a special guest, Arjun. He's our college roommate, big NFL fan. So let's get into the second half of the show. We're going to start here with the NHL. NHL came back this weekend. They went straight into, they had some exhibition games, but they're in qualifying rounds right now. Best of five series. You know, Noah, first reactions from this weekend of hockey, you know, who'd you like? Who surprised you?
Yeah, I mean, a lot coming back, just because I think it's about five or six games being played each day, which is a lot of hockey. Great to have. I feel like it's a lot easier to watch just any random hockey team, just because the games are so fast-paced. Some of them can be high-scoring, but it's very entertaining to watch. Who I think looks good, honestly, are the Philadelphia Flyers. They beat the Bruins 4-1 earlier today. They look great. I also saw them scrimmage the Penguins right before the qualifying round started, and they beat the Penguins 3-2, which, even though it was a scrimmage, they still looked very strong. They have a bunch of young guys, and they're led by Captain Claude Giroux. I feel like they look very strong, and Carter Hart looks very good for them in net. And then, Mark, you had just mentioned this. What happened with the Avalanche and the St. Louis Blues just now? But they look really good, but we were talking about this during the break. What happened with them?
Yeah, I mean, Avalanche tied with the Blues 1-1. End of the third period. As time's expiring, 0.1 seconds on the clock, Kadri scores for the Avalanche on a rebound goal or a redirect goal. Absolutely unbelievable. I mean, that's why you play till the end of the period. You got to play your hardest. Avs beat them. I love the Avs this series. I mean, I hope that they beat the Blues. My team coming out a few shows ago, we had Tom Ackway on, and we were talking about NHL. My team is the Flyers, and they look damn good. Bruins were not playing Tuukka Rask. They played Jaroslav Halak, but I still think that the Flyers look really good. My team, the Islanders, they beat the Panthers the other day, so that was really good. Noah, unfortunately, the Penguins lost. What do you think happened to the Penguins yesterday? And why do you think, you know, the Canadians were able to upset the Pens yesterday?
You know, it was funny. So I was watching the game with my whole family. And right before the game started, you know, all the analysts are talking about what the Canadians need to do to beat the Penguins. And they pretty much said, you know, Carey Price has to play lights out. They need to slow the Penguins down in the neutral zone so they can't create odd man rushes. and they just need to hope that the Penguins underestimate them as a team. Well, luckily for the Canadians, the Pens did exactly that. They underestimated them as a team. They came out flying in the first 10 minutes, but once the Canadians got sort of, I don't want to call it a lucky goal, but Jack Johnson, who was a defenseman for the Penguins, pushed one of the players into the net on Matt Murray, so the goal went in. Kind of a fluke goal there, but anyways, after that, Pens were completely deflated. Carey Price just played absolutely lights out, had 40-plus saves. I mean, it just looked easy for him. And the Penguins couldn't get anything going after the first 10 minutes in the game just in terms of momentum. Even though they did score two goals in the second, they just looked flat. I mean, and they're supposed to be the top team out of anyone who's not in the round-robin seeding between the top four teams in each conference. I mean, the Penguins lost to the 24th seed. Not good. And the other thing, too, is I just believe Matt Murray's super shaky back there in net. I don't think the team has a lot of confidence in him at all. If they have any hope of turning it around in this series, I think that they have to switch goaltenders. That's just my opinion. But it's not only the Penguins that are coming out and sort of disappointing. Another team with a bunch of stars, arguably the best player in the NHL in Connor McDavid. The Oilers lose to the Blackhawks, who nobody thought the Blackhawks were going to be any good, even though that they do have guys like Jonathan Taves, Patrick Kane, and those alike. No one thought that the Blackhawks were going to be a match for McDavid and league point leader Leon Draisaitl, who's been absolutely lights out, and he was before the break for COVID. But the Oilers just did not look good at all, and it's the same narrative back there. Whoever's in net for them, I don't think the Oilers have confidence. They just can't stop the puck, so those are two surprises with the Penguins and the Oilers, who I thought were going to be, you know, teams to easily make it out of the qualifying round and move on. But yeah, Mark, who do you think is another interesting team or surprise team that maybe is upsetting somebody?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Oilers were probably my biggest shock that played already this weekend. Maybe the Canadians. I mean, I watched that Pens game, and like you said, the problem is not their offense. The problem is their goaltending. And I think Murray is a problem, and he needs to really step it up there. Hurricanes beating the Rangers. I thought the Rangers could pull it off, but the Hurricanes were the favorite. The Canes looked pretty sharp. The Canes looked pretty sharp that game. It was nice to see, like, literally within the first 5 minutes of the game, Rangers and the Canes dropped the gloves. There was a fight. So the intensity is there in this hockey. Unfortunate for the Jets. The Jets could have, you know, they're a decent team. They lost Mark Sheffield, good player for them, but he's gone with a bad injury, which could last and linger and could be detrimental for the team. But probably the biggest upset, I mean, the Oilers, Islanders beating the Panthers was not, it wasn't an upset in my opinion. I thought the Islanders were going to win. Bobrovsky played out of his mind, which is, you know, what kind of kept Florida in it. Coyotes beating the Predators, I love to see it. Coyotes were a team of mine that I was like, you know what, they could beat the Preds. I like the Coyotes beating the Predators. Noah, I think you were pretty high on the Predators before the season. I think the Preds, you know, it was a close game. They lost, the Preds lost 4-3, but the Coyotes, they definitely have some good players, especially with Taylor Hall there. And I'm excited for tonight's game. I love Vancouver. I mean, I think Vancouver could be a team to watch in the playoffs, and I don't think the Wild are really that good. So, I mean, that game's not till 10:30 Eastern here, so after the show's done, the game's going to be playing. But, I mean, I think Vancouver's a team to watch. But, I mean, the Flyers look good. Oh, it's just great to have hockey back. I can't wait. Hockey all this week, and it's just going to be really exciting. But Noah, what do you think about the Preds? I'm pretty sure that you were high on them. What do you think about them losing to the Coyotes 4-3?
Yeah, I don't know if you saw one of the fluky goals that happened, but one of the Coyotes players shot it off of Matt Duchene's chest, I believe, and it just redirected into the net and went in. So kind of a fluke goal there that definitely helped them win. I am high on the Preds. I was before the season, just because of the names on their roster and the fact that they've been deep into the playoffs before when they played in the Stanley Cup final against the Pittsburgh Penguins back in 2017. They didn't play Pekka Rinne in goal, which was a little startling to me because obviously he's the big veteran guy. He's got plenty of experience, but they didn't start him. They've got guys like Philip Forsberg, Roman Josi, Juuse Saros, Ryan Johansson, all big name players who have all contributed in the past. They also have like grinders like Nick Bonino and Colton Sissons there. So I'm not surprised that they lost just because of look at how many other upsets that we've seen. I mean, that's just what it's going to be. It's this weird quarantine playoff format. You're not going to see the favorite win 100% of the time. I mean, like you did say, the Arizona Coyotes, they traded for Taylor Hall. They also have a guy in Phil Kessel who was on the Penguins, very good scorer there. They do have some other contributors there as well. I just think you're going to see a bunch of upsets. I don't necessarily have much of an explanation other than it's playoff hockey and anything can happen. I mean, it doesn't necessarily matter how good your roster looks on paper. It matters how your team's playing together, what kind of chemistry you have, and the energy you bring on the ice. So, but it's only one game for every one of these teams. You can't just book everything right now. That's why you have five games. That's why it's the playoffs.
Yeah, and you know what? I think the five games, like, you know, in a regular series, you see you drop the first game. Okay, it's a momentum killer, but it's not that bad because you have a lot of games to kind of make up, you know, lost time here. You got a lot to make up your, you know, if you lose the first one, you could come back. It's best of five series now. Like, first one to three wins, you're a third of the way there if you already got one win. Like, that's obviously easy math. But, like, seriously, like, if you drop the first one, it's really, really going to be tough for your team to get that momentum back because you're going into the second game, lost momentum, and you're like, that second game is a must win. If you drop the first one, and you drop the second one, a 2-0 lead. The other team only needs one. You got to win three in a row. That's really, really tough. So I think that winning that first game, you know, a lot of the teams that did right now, it's going to be really interesting down the stretch. So great first weekend of hockey. Let's move into something that happened last weekend, last part of the show. We're going to talk about the top 100 NFL players that got dropped. That list is compiled by the NFL players. They vote on it for each other to see who's really the best in the league. Number one on the list, Lamar Jackson. People can debate that. I mean, Patrick Mahomes was four. Russell Wilson was two, I believe. And, you know, finally getting the respect that he deserves because he really is a true playmaker for that team. Aaron Donald at three, in my opinion, is a, when it's all said and done, he calls it a career, going to be a top 10 defensive player in NFL history. He's so good. But you know what? We're going to go around in a circle. We're going to debate this a little bit. Who do you guys think? We're going to start here with Arjun. We haven't heard from him yet. Who do you think was the most underrated player on the top 100 list?
Underrated player of the top 100 in 2020. I'm going to go with Deshaun Watson at number 20. A young guy, absolute playmaker on the offensive side of the ball, an absolute gem to watch playing football. Ranked at number 20, I think that's a bit low for him. He was making plays. He was putting the team on his back. And if anybody can remember that the one play from the Raiders-Texans game, I think it was the Raiders, where he got literally kicked in the eye in the middle of a play and still managed to throw. Did he throw or did he run that touchdown in? I think he threw it, right?
He threw that touchdown in. Yeah, he threw that touchdown in. That was a hell of a play. Hell of a play.
Yeah, I mean, he's an absolute beast of a player. And, you know, I think at 20, he is a bit low. I would have liked to see him top 15, maybe top 10. But that's my pick for an underrated player.
Okay. I respect it. I mean, Deshaun Watson is an absolute beast. The only quarterbacks ranked above him, you're talking Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson, you know, all those guys. The guys I just mentioned, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, is Deshaun better than them? Would you have ranked him higher than any of them?
I would have absolutely put Deshaun Watson over Tom Brady. I mean, I know a lot of people are going to argue and they're going to, you know, drive that point home that Tom Brady's the best quarterback to ever play the game. But I'll say time in and time out again, Tom Brady is not that fun of a player to watch, and he's not that fun of a player in general. Deshaun Watson beats Brady in talent, mobility, you know, even throw power. Tom Brady, he's not throwing it more than 10 yards down the field anymore. And, you know, you don't see Tom Brady putting the team on his back, you know, a couple plays out of the game and just absolutely torching the defense with his feet. I think Deshaun Watson, you know, like I've said before, just making his plays and putting his team and, you know, getting his team to rally around him. And if you look at it too, the offensive side of the football for the Texans wasn't the greatest this year. I mean, yes, of course, they had DeAndre Hopkins, but the run game was weak. Will Fuller was in and out with injuries. And, you know, Deshaun Watson just kept performing and kept doing what he needed to do to put that team and to make that team competitive. So I think I would have definitely ranked Deshaun Watson over Tom Brady.
Yeah. Noah, what do you think? Reaction to Arjun and your pick for the most underrated.
Reaction to Arjun. I mean, I respect the pick. I would also agree that just based off of last year's play, Tom Brady wasn't nearly as productive as he's been in the past seasons. I would absolutely rank Deshaun Watson over him. I don't know if I would put him any higher. He did jump up 31 spots from last year, which is a big nod by all of the players, and top 20 is still very solid. I can see, Arjun, where you want him to be ranked higher just because of where Tom Brady's at, and even a guy like Aaron Rodgers. Deshaun Watson threw and rushed for more yards than Aaron Rodgers did last season, even though Rodgers might have been more efficient. But I think it's a little bit of the Russell Wilson argument, where Deshaun Watson literally is that team because they don't necessarily have the best offensive line or most reliable run game there in Houston. I know that they do put up some decent numbers, but it's not necessarily a star-studded cast around him from the O-line and run game aspect. He's a dynamic playmaker, so I could see where you want him to be ranked higher, so I respect that. I'm going to go with my most underrated player, and I'm going to go with a guy who's also high on this list, is TJ Watt at 25. Look, the guy, I think, was the runner-up in Defensive Player of the Year voting to Stephon Gilmore, and Stephon Gilmore is ranked 9th. Look, TJ Watt had an absolutely unreal year for the Steelers last year. I mean, he passed up his brother in terms of where he's ranked. I mean, TJ Watt, in my opinion, held down the Steelers' defense. He was the cornerstone for them alongside Cam Hayward that got them through that abysmal 0-3 start. I mean, if you don't have guys like that on your defense, they don't trade for Minkah Fitzpatrick to try to salvage the season. He was making plays regardless of whether they were winning or losing. He had 14.5 sacks, 2 interceptions at a linebacker that's very respectable. And they also put Chandler Jones higher than them at 15, and he wasn't even ranked last season. So, I don't know. I mean, in my opinion, I do think he should have cracked the top 20, considering he finished 2nd in Defensive Player of the Year voting, and Stephon Gilmore got top 10. But, what do you guys think about that? Do you think that he's too low? Do you think he's just right? Am I wrong? Maybe he's ranked 40.
I think, you know what? And maybe it's a little bit biased here, but I don't think it is. I think TJ Watt was rated way too low. He, in my opinion, is the best outside linebacker in the league. Obviously him and Khalil Mack right there, but how can you rank him that low? I mean, he is an absolute beast. He's the best defensive player on the entire Steelers defense, and everybody coming up at the end of last season and the beginning of this season, all the analysts, everybody's saying, you know what? Pittsburgh's got that best defense coming into 2020. And it's headed, you know, the head of it is TJ Watt. How are you going to say that he's not that good of a player leading the best defense in the league? Come on. You're going to rank the Stephon Gilmore top 10 on the NFL top 100 list, and he won Defensive Player of the Year. I get it. But the only other person really in consideration for that was TJ Watt, and you're not going to even rank him that high? Come on. I think it's kind of robbery here. Arjun, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I mean, TJ Watt, absolute beast of a player on that Pittsburgh defense. And you guys have been saying he came 2nd for voting. He actually came 3rd But even then, I don't know who he came behind. But even then, third for defensive player of the year voting and only ranked number 25, I think he definitely should have been ranked higher.
Yeah. So my most underrated player, and you know what? I couldn't pick because I have two. I'm going to say one. I'm going to defend one and say one. I think one hometown bias, Cam Hayward. You know, I think he's really underrated. Cam Hayward was one of the best defensive ends in the league last year, and he just doesn't get the respect that he deserves. Cam Hayward has consistently been one of the top defensive players in the NFL, and in 2020, they ranked him 84th. And I think that that's just – he had better stats than DeForest Buckner and Chris Jones, and Chris Jones was ranked like top 50 in the league. And you're going to rank this guy at 84, and he had better stats? I don't think that's right. And they play very similar positions. One's a defensive tackle, one's technically a defensive end. But I think that that's really, really unfair. But the one that I think that is even more abysmal is Tyron Smith. I mean, Tyron Smith is a top three left tackle in the league, offensive tackle in general in the league, and you're going to rank him at 78th best player in the league. Look, maybe I value left tackle a little bit more than everybody else, but there's a reason why the Houston Texans traded a first-round pick for Laremy Tunsil to protect Deshaun Watson on that left tackle. There's a reason why Seattle Seahawks, the only good player on that offensive line, is Dwayne Brown from the Texans, who is a left tackle. There's, I mean, the best offensive linemen in the league are left tackles. It's the most important position on that line, and it's a top five most important position on the whole team. You know, you got the quarterback. I think it goes, honestly, for me, it probably goes, you got to have a good quarterback, got to have a good middle linebacker, and you got to have a good left tackle because that's your blind side for your QB. You don't want him getting hit, and you're going to rank him as the 78th best player, and he's a top three offensive tackle in the league. I mean, you got to appreciate a more offensive lineman, I feel, in my opinion, get no love. I mean, the past 2 years before this, in 2018, Tyron Smith was ranked 39. In 2017, he was ranked 18th. And now you're going to rank him 78th. I think it's insulting. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't want to be biased here alongside you, but look, Cam Hayward at 84, like I said, alongside TJ Watt, he's the reason why that the Steelers' defense is as strong as it is. I mean, third consecutive All-Pro season, or second consecutive All-Pro season for him, sorry. Third consecutive Pro Bowl. I mean, he's the captain of that defense, even though TJ Watt's the better player, in my opinion. At 84, that's just way too low. And there are plenty of other guys that you can make a case for that are way too low. The one thing that I think they're pointing to is they're holding skill positions just way too high on this list. And I think that's for fans, you know, they're fan favorites just in terms of watching them. But look, I feel like a lot of defensive guys, especially D linemen and O linemen, like you said, Tyron Smith there as well, they just do not get the credit that they deserve for how much they play, how many snaps they're on the field for, and what they grind out. I mean, I feel like the skill positions are just rated a little too high. For example, where you're looking at Tyron Smith at 78 and Cam Hayward at 84, there's a guy like DK Metcalf who did have a nice rookie season there. But do I think that DK Metcalf is a more complete player than the two players that you picked, Mark? Absolutely not. And I could pick out plenty of other skill position guys that I would say the same for.
Arjun, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I mean, I know I really like what you said about how people are just putting skill position players way above. You know, it's a fan thing. Fans aren't really watching the linemen or, you know, really defensive line kind of making those big plays. They're looking for the big flashy runs from the running back or the big throw or the, you know, big jukes from the wide receivers, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, I agree with you guys. These two players, absolute beasts at their positions. Tyron Smith, an absolute dominant left tackle for the Cowboys, and then Cam Hayward, an unreal defensive lineman, you know, especially partnered alongside TJ Watt. They had unreal season, unreal defensive plays. So definitely a little low on that list.
Yeah. So, you know what? Let's move on to the most overrated players on the list. Noah, we're going to start with you. Who's your pick for the most overrated on that list?
Well, again, I'm going to go with some of the skill position, especially I'm going to go with a QB here. Look, I don't believe that this guy should be even close to the top 100. Josh Allen from the Buffalo Bills. Listen, I mean, there's plenty of stats that I could pick out to say why he shouldn't be in the top 100, but the dude hasn't completed in his career more than 60% of his passes. I think his career completion percentage is around 58 or 59. I mean, you got backups that can do that. He's putting up backup numbers from throwing the football. He's a great rushing QB, which a lot of people actually don't know him for. I mean, he's rushed for, I believe, 9 touchdowns last year, which if you look at the next guy closest to him in the QB ranking, Kyler Murray finished 90th. He's known as a rushing quarterback because he has to roll out of the pocket so much due to his bad offensive line, and I think he only rushed for 5 touchdowns. So Josh Allen could run, and everyone points to how good of a deep ball he has. Mark, we were talking about this before the show. His deep ball percentage is like 30th out of 32 starting QBs in the league, and he has the absolute worst completion percentage out of all starting quarterbacks. His job is to throw the ball, and he's the worst in the league at it, and yet you put him at 87. He's way too high. I don't know what else to say. Way too high. Doesn't belong in there.
I agree there, dude. I think he's way too high on the list. Bills made the playoffs last year. I mean, what were they, a first-round exit against the Texans? I think it's primarily because of their defense that they made the playoffs last year. Their offense wasn't really that good. Josh Allen's a good QB in terms of running, like you said, but, I mean, he can get things done. He just makes some stupid moves. I mean, you're talking about the playoff game against the Texans. Guy's running down the sideline, and what does he do? He tries to lateral it as he's getting tackled, almost turns into a fumble, and the Texans pick it up. His decision-making is not there yet. I don't think he's a top 100 player in the league. My pick for the most overrated, and this may seem as a little bit of a surprise, but I'm going to go George Kittle. George Kittle got ranked 7th in the whole entire league. His stats versus Travis Kelce's, who was not ranked that high, he was ranked top 20, I believe. They were very comparable, if not almost identical. And, I mean, there's the debate that Kelce or Kittle, I mean, Kittle's younger. Look, Rob Gronkowski has had a more dominant career and more dominant seasons than George Kittle and was never ranked this high. Kittle is the highest ranked tight end on the top 100 list ever. Is he that good? Has he had the best season? Is he the best tight end essentially since this list has been made for the past few years? I don't think so. I mean, he's good. Don't get me wrong. He's a top 20 player in the league. But to rank him higher than DeAndre Hopkins, Julio Jones, I mean, it's kind of crazy. Who would you rather have on your team? I mean, really, think about that. Who would you rather have? Would you rather go out and get a number 7 George Kittle, or would you rather go get a Julio or a DeAndre Hopkins? I mean, honestly, I think the answer is clear. You got to put him in front of Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, Deshaun Watson, like you said. I mean, I don't know. You're putting him in front of Stephon Gilmore, the reigning defensive player of the year. You're going to put George Kittle in front of him? I think that's totally overrated here.
Arjun, what do you think? You know,
Mark, I'm not going to agree with you, but I'm not going to disagree with you either. I think George, he's obviously a beast of a player. He was making some huge plays for the Niners this year. But, you know, not just catching the ball and not just making plays with the ball in his hand. He was an unreal blocker for the Niners as well. So, I mean, he really is kind of a total package. He can catch and run with the ball, and if you need him to, he can stay back and block on the line or even downfield. 7, you know, like you said, it's the highest a tight end has ever been ranked. He passed Rob Gronkowski. I really wouldn't – I can't say whether I would rank him lower or rank him higher. It's just weird to think about with a tight end because there's a lot you have to take in account for with them, with their playmaking ability with the ball and then with their blocking ability on the line. So 7, you know, like I have no idea where I would rank George Kittle.
Who's your pick, Arjun?
For overrated player?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the number 1 rated player in the league this year, Lamar Jackson.
Oh, my God.
Do I think Lamar Jackson was rated too high? Yes, I do. and I'll tell you why. It's not because he was, I think he's a one-year wonder, and it's not because I think the Ravens just pooped in the bed in their playoff game, which I do think that. But I think Patrick Mahomes, there's a reason Patrick Mahomes is a $500 million football player. He is the best talent that we have ever seen. He is the one of the most fiercest competitors that we have ever seen. He makes plays with his feet. He makes plays with his throwing ability. Patrick Mahomes, game in, game out, he was dependable. He was spot on at making plays that he needed to make, and he led the Chiefs to their first Super Bowl win in 50 years. So do I think that Patrick Mahomes should have been the number one player over Lamar Jackson? Absolutely. And you know, you guys are probably about to rip me a new one for that, but I'm looking forward to hear what you guys have to say right now.
Noah, you first.
Dude, I mean, come on. He didn't even play a full season. And I think they're giving him the credit that he deserves, putting up at number four, and he didn't put up nearly as good of numbers as he did last year. Look, I do agree with you that I think that he might be, all said and done, one of the most talented players, if not the most talented player that we've seen just in terms of pure ability. But Lamar Jackson plays two positions. He improved immensely. He wasn't even ranked last year just because he came in midway through. But a guy who rushes for over 1,000 yards at QB position, he only did throw for 3,000 yards, which is surprising. But he had 36 touchdown passes and only 6 interceptions. That's an unreal touchdown to interception ratio. And like I said, playing two positions. I mean, Pat Mahomes isn't rushing for nearly as many yards as that. He didn't even finish inside the top five. And like I think Pat Mahomes has a better team around him in general, especially in terms of the playmakers. Lamar Jackson has his best playmakers, Mark Andrews. He doesn't have anyone special on the outside to throw the ball to. And you could argue that Mark Ingram isn't any better than Clyde Edwards-Helaire coming in with this season. I mean, everyone's hyping up Clyde Edwards-Helaire and how he's going to be in terms of the run game. And we know that their pass game is better in Kansas City with Ty Hill, Travis Kelce, Mecole Hardman, and other players as well. I mean, I just think when you're thinking of last season in 2019, I don't think it's even a question that Lamar Jackson was the best player. I mean, I just think of that run. I don't know about you, Mark, but I think of that run against the Bengals. Cincinnati. Yep. Absolutely. Just hit the B button, spin around three guys, and just go up midfield. And he's just like, oh, yep. I think Ezekiel Elliott said it best on the show, is that he's making NFL highlights look like his high school huddle tape. I mean, it's just absolutely absurd.
Yeah. You know what, Arjun, I'm sorry, dude. I have to agree with Noah here. Noah summed it up very nicely. The only thing I want to add is that, like, I think when you put this list together, yes, Arjun, you're right. Mahomes is the best QB in the league. If you're starting a franchise right now, who do you want on your team? Patrick Mahomes. That's who I want starting my team. But if you look at the most dominant, the best talent, the guy that you cannot stop, Lamar Jackson. You can't figure him out. The Titans did because
he got figured out pretty well in the playoffs.
That is true. The Titans were able to figure him out. But I think that's a more of a credit to Derrick Henry. I mean, Derrick Henry was an absolute...
Derrick Henry's not playing defense and stopping Lamar Jackson.
It's true. Derrick Henry was an absolute tank. And, I mean, when you force Lamar to really throw the ball in those big moments, you can't. But, I mean, are you going to boil his whole season down to one game? If you're talking the regular season, I cannot name one team going... Like, if I were to pit the Ravens up to another team that whole season, who would I say can stop him? I not even the Pats. And the Pats had the best defense last season. They cannot stop him. I don't think that you know, even the Steelers can't stop him. He's unbelievable talent. He can throw, he can run. I see your argument, though, definitely, because Mahomes is the best QB in the league. But last season, like Noah said, he didn't play a full season. And I just think you can't really game plan for Lamar because he's just too good. But let's do the last thing. We're running out of time here, so let's be quick. Who missed the list? Arjun, we'll start with you. Who missed the top 100 list that should be on it?
I'm going to go with a player that really saved my butt in fantasy last year. I'll be the first to admit my team wasn't the greatest, but this player really helped me out. Marlon Mack, running back for the Indianapolis Colts. He didn't make the top 100, and he had 90 more rush yards than Saquon Barkley. He had 2 more rushing yards than Saquon Barkley. Admittedly, he had nowhere near the amount of receptions yards as Saquon, but he was a beast for the Colts. He was a solid running back, both in the game and for fantasy players. I think having him off the top 100 list was a bit of a snub for Marlon Mack.
Arjun, I love that. I never even thought of Marlon Mack. Over 1,000 yards rushing, 8 touchdowns, absolute beast. That's amazing. I didn't even think about that. I mean, he was actually really good last season and didn't make the list. That's totally underrated right there. I love that pick. Noah, what do you think about that?
I like that pick as well. Like you said, over 1,000 rush yards. I mean, you got guys like Josh Jacobs on the list who was, I believe, in the 70s. I mean, you have plenty of guys who arguably Marlon Mack has similar stats to, and he just misses the top 100. I would put him right alongside with Leonard Fournette there as well as another back who missed the top 100. That's not my pick for this list, but I would compare those two guys and say, with those stats, with the stats both of them had, because I also believe Leonard Fournette should have been on there, but you know, definitely a good pick there for you, Arjun. But no, if you want to transition it to my top one or my snub from the list, I'm going to go with the wide receiver in Devontae Parker. He has been sort of a bust in terms of his production since coming into the league in 2015. But last season, he had a little bit of a resurgence with Ryan Fitzpatrick back there throwing him the football. 72 catches, 1,200 yards, and 9 touchdowns. Look, I know I said earlier in the show that their value and skill position player is a little bit too high, but those numbers that I just mentioned are better than the numbers from Jarvis Landry, DK Metcalf, Keenan Allen, and Larry Fitzgerald, and those guys all finished higher than him on the list. I'm not saying that he deserves to be, you know, top 70, 60, 50, but I'm saying if those players are coming into the list and being ranked higher than him, I just don't think that they deserve to be on there. Larry Fitzgerald is at 69th, and I know what he's done in the league in the past, but he only had 800 receiving yards and 4 touchdowns. I mean, come on. Look at the stats, and the Dolphins were a much worse team. I just think Devontae Parker got snubbed.
Yeah, I like that too. Definitely got snubbed there, but I mean, it's kind of crazy. It's kind of crazy how they make this list. I mean, Todd Gurley's on the list. Todd Gurley did not have that great of a season, honestly. Nowhere near as good of a season as, like you said, Marlon Mack, and he didn't even make the list. But mine, who missed the list, and probably the one that, you know, a lot of sportscasters said missed the list, and probably the most glaring, Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz is by far a better QB than Josh Allen. He's a better QB than Ryan Tannehill. He's a better QB than Dak Prescott, and he didn't make the list. I mean, Dak Prescott didn't even make the playoffs. Carson Wentz did, but that team thrown a, as Colin Cowherd says, thrown a lawn furniture and deck patio furniture, and he doesn't make the list? Come on. It's not like that defense is stellar. They got Fletcher Cox, and the secondary is really, really, really poor. Their offensive weapons, like I said, they really had nobody. They have a good running back in Miles Sanders, but come on. You're not going to put him on the list? I think that that's kind of ridiculous. They're not going to put Carson Wentz on the list. I mean, all great takes. Marlon Mack, great take. Devontae Parker, another good one. And I like my Carson Wentz pick. What do you guys think about Carson Wentz?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, you look at some of the QBs that are ranked on there. I've already ripped Josh Allen to shreds about why he doesn't belong on here. But he has better stats than a guy I really do like in Kyler Murray. And then, like you said, I mean, there are other guys on there. Ryan Tannehill, Kirk Cousins. I mean, these are quality starters in the NFL, but are they as talented or did they put up as good of numbers? Absolutely not. I think he's getting absolutely snubbed here, and it's not like he should have just cracked the top 100. He should be well into the middle pack of the list, especially in front of some of the QBs that I just mentioned. I mean, he had no help there on the outside last year. That's why they addressed it so much in the offseason. Not only through free agency, but the draft as well. I mean, give the guy some weapons. I mean, I believe his stats, he threw for over 4,000 yards, 27 touchdowns, and 7 interceptions. That's better stats than, I'd say, 5 or 6 of the QBs that were ranked ahead of him. So, and you could argue that it could be even higher. So definitely got snubbed.
Arjun, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with that. I like that pick, Mark. Carson Wentz is arguably a much better quarterback than Josh Allen. Kyler Murray, you know, Kyler Murray's in his first season, but still not having Carson Wentz on that list. And, you know, even he's not just great at making plays and, you know, throwing the ball, but he's just a great player and a great personality to have on that team, great leader. So definitely a big snub for Carson Wentz.
So that just about does it for us at On The Line Podcast. Arjun, man, thanks for coming in. It's been a real pleasure having you on the podcast this week. But what we're going to start doing from now on, we're going to bring back the gambling corner. I mean, I've been doing a lot of gambling. I don't know about you guys. I've been doing a lot of gambling when sports comes back. So we're definitely going to bring that back. Next week, we're going to talk more MLB. We're going to have some more baseball. And we're going to continue the talks about, you know, NBA, NHL, and anything that's happening in football. I mean, it's great to have sports back, and it's great doing this podcast. You know, Arjun, man, thanks for coming on, dude. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks for having me, guys. It was a great time.
Yeah,
and Noah, man, as usual, Noah, dude, it's always been a pleasure, and I can't wait to get after it next week.
Absolutely, man. Always a pleasure. Great to have Arjun on. Hope to have him on in the future, and we'll see you guys next week.